1 of 2019 NAB AFL Draft. The Gold Coast Suns selected Matthew Rowell from the Oakley Chargers.
This excitement and joy all in one, and I've been, you know, working all my junior career to get to this position, so it's just an unbelievable feeling and something I'll always remember.
The Suns had a fantastic hand at this year's draft and selected Matty Rowell with the number one pick, Noah Anderson with number two, and now all of these youngsters begin their journey. So we thought it was a good time to catch up with the coach of the Gold Coast Suns, Stuart Dew, because there are a lot of fresh faces at this club as they begin their pre-season period. Stewie, thanks for your time. Thanks for joining us on SEN.
No worries. Good morning.
How is the feeling in amongst the club and the group at the moment? Dal and I were sort of working our way through some of the fresh faces and new names. There are a lot of them as you start this campaign.
Yeah, you look around, you know, and we've got 52 on our list now. So, you know, it's pretty extensive. The warm-up the other day on Monday was like going back to the amateur footy club when everyone rolls out once round one's around the corner. So it was, that's great for us. Obviously got a few in throughout the trade period, you know, a little bit of experience, but then obviously the young lads through the draft, which is, you know, they've come in, bit of breath and fresh air, and they're raring to go. We're trying to hold them back, actually, so they're pretty keen to rip straight in.
When you come into the job like you did, you obviously have the players on the list that are there at the time, and you work with those, but a couple of years in now, is it starting to feel more like your team?
Yeah, oh, definitely now. You know, the first year, I think probably early to mid-October, so you're pretty set for the first year, and then, you know, then you're making a few decisions within 12 months and then still bound by some contracts. So we had an opportunity to probably fast-track that a little bit, and we're aware that that may cause a little bit of pain in season 2019, but we know now. We certainly look around and go, well, you know, we're really building this list together, and, you know, along with all the staff here and Craig Cameron, our list manager, and Cal Burns, our recruiter. So we certainly feel like we've got our fingerprints all over it now.
You look at the last couple of drafts where you've brought in some really talented players, and we spoke about Matty Rowell, Noah Anderson, but also Sam Flanders. You bring in some through the trade period. So over the last couple of years, there's been quite a new turnover. Does that also create some issues or some challenges for you to try and get the continuity or consistency of messages because you've got players from so many different backgrounds recently?
Yeah, it's probably given us, you know, getting some respected players from great organisations like, I guess, Adelaide Footy Club, Richmond, Geelong, and even Jack Holmes from Port Adelaide. He's really good for our players that have been here for a number of years to just get the perspective, but also, I guess, validation that what we're doing here is a really good program and measured up to where they've come from. And that's one thing that we were keen to get. Good role models in for our young list because we are very young. We're going to be young again. You know, although we got some experience in, we also, you know, lost some experience as well. So in terms of our age profile, won't change too much. But pre-season is the time to try and get that synergy going. So with the draft being reasonably late, that's a little bit of a challenge. But once we, you know, we got one more week, we're at camp, and we come back from Christmas, and that's going to be pretty crucial, you know, January, Feb for us.
Do you have a belief or a theory about ways to best educate your young talent? And once again, referencing the last couple of drafts, and you've got some of the best kids in the country, and you've just brought in another three in the last week or so. Do you have a belief or a theory about the way that they need to learn AFL football that'll hold them in really good stead for the next 10 or so years? Or you just believe if they're in the position, they're good enough to play that you roll them out?
Oh, I think we probably, our overall philosophy, and, you know, I think when they first get here, their heads are spinning. You know, they've come from school majority and a whole different environment. So we're really wary of information overload, and clearly they can play the game. So we probably see it as a step process in that they don't need to know absolutely everything about AFL footy in terms of the nuances of the game. But we really want to get them physically prepared so they're confident in their body and then they're able to be selected. And we're happy to wear that maybe they don't know 100% of what we're after in the first year, but, you know, rather than trying to get everything crammed into their head, we still want them, you know, come in with real flair. So, yeah, you know, I think with last year with Kingy and Jack obviously played a lot of footy, we really just got them confident in their bodies and let them play, and they pick it up along the way as well.
Gold Coast Suns coach Stuart Dew joining us on SEN Summer Breakfast. Stewie, I guess the carrot always dangled in front of professional athletes is to win and to win as many games and to go as far in a season as you possibly can. No doubt it's been a tough couple of years for the Suns, but what does winning do? When you're trying to teach a group, what does winning do? Does it accelerate that learning?
I think it's just an injection of belief in what we're doing. And I was really proud of this group last year in that they were able to maintain that belief. Although the results, the end results of 4 points weren't there, we did a lot of work on, what does actually the steps involve that get you to that winning and making sure that we made sure they're on the right track and getting them to understand that, things will turn. You've just got to hang in there. You're not going to, do it really well for a month or 2 months and all of a sudden, oh, now we've made it and we're going to start winning. So a fair bit of education around the steps taken that are needed to have that consistency of performance. And, we've used our leaders and I think they really feel that belief. And we probably, as a footy club, we don't really want to sell that to the players. They're sort of selling it to themselves. And I think they spoke with their feet, really. But I think we've had 21 players sign on in the last 12 months and in the right way, which is important. So, full credit to them. And we think that that'll turn in the coming years.
Stuart, when I think of you as a player and also as a coach and probably your time at Sydney, and we speak about the culture and the standards and accountability, all the things that we associate with you, and how have you gone about instilling that and passing your messages onto this playing group so that this legacy will last a very, very long time of this football club?
Yeah, it's just about informing the players and making them realise their responsibilities, particularly and when we talk about our older players, Dave and Whitsy as captains, they're 26, so they're still young men. We firmly believe they're coming into their prime. And so just, I guess, the influence that they can have. It's all well and good us sitting in the cheap seats telling them how they're going and how easy it is or how hard it is. But I think the power of that peer feedback, but also the peer drive. And I think having seen last pre-season and how they've started this pre-season, I think they're starting to get their head around, they're the ones really in control. We're here to facilitate, but in terms of actually executing, they play a big part in that.
You mentioned before about not having too much information for the young players. I think that sort of can almost go across the whole board with AFL players at time. Have you identified a couple of areas for improvement without doing too much over the summer that you think these are the basics that we need to get right for the season 2020?
I think just rehearsing our and putting them in situations where, decision making with the ball. And I know every team's probably talking about that, but I think we don't want to be too prescriptive in terms of how we want to move the ball. We want multiple options. I think we've seen in the last two or three years the teams that it's almost you're not looking for the perfect. Perfect doesn't present itself much in AFL footy these days with how well teams defend. So the fact that contest work won't go away, it's always going to be there. We're doing a fair bit on that. And just the natural progression of our list has actually built a bit of competitiveness in training. And I think guys are looking around and saying, well, so 52 doesn't go into 22. Yep. So this is my opportunity to set the scene, which is healthy for us. We haven't quite had that in the past. I think, we've had some players get games just because they're match fit. But we'd love to pick our side on performance rather than just are they fit for games.
We're talking about fresh faces to the group. That includes the club. You've just added Neil Craig to your coaching setup, Stewie. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, we've been speaking to Neil for quite a while, and obviously he's been heavily involved with England in English rugby. And John Haynes and I met Neil, I think, not this October, but last October. We went over to England and spent a little bit of time with Neil. And, obviously, he's 63. He's got a wealth of experience. He's done a number of roles. So, and he's still, challenging his philosophies. And it's, for me, it was a no-brainer. He's obviously going to likely continue that role with England. So we won't get him too much. But when he's here, he's going to be a great sounding board for not only myself, but us as a coaching group. And, he's already, he's here for this week. Yep. Just to get to know everyone. And then he'll go over to England up until about March, early April. So we're making sure that we use him. But just having that sounding board of someone who's actually sat in this seat as well, who can, I guess, support me, but as a coaching group as well, how are we working together? How's our cohesion? We demand that of the players and making sure us as coaches are looking at improving ourselves as well.
New season, new opportunities, and for your group, it starts now. Stewie, thanks for joining us today and good luck for the season.
Thanks very much.
Oh, gee, that's hit hard from Harper. As I said, he's only got one gear, and it is full speed ahead. He's only a little man. Harper, oh, he tries the fancy stuff, and this time pulls it off. Well done, Sam Harper.
That's it. There's a single. Six. But if you bowl short and wide, you can put it. You need someone in the crowd, not on the ring.
You bowl short, he will put you over the fence. If you bowl full, he will smoke you through covers for four. And if you bowl even fuller, he'll ramp you over the top of the keeper's head for six. He was one of the revelations of last year's Big Bash campaign. Sam Harper is his name and was a huge part of the Renegades title-winning team from last season. And he joins us today on Melbourne Renegades Membership Day here on SEN. Good morning, Sammy.
Morning, Jack. Morning, Nick. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on with us, mate. How are the preparations coming along? As Dal and I were just saying, it's only a couple of weeks until it all starts again.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a very exciting time. Got the new coach on board now, which is exciting for us all. And, one more Shield game to get through and we're underway.
So with that in mind, and as you say, you've got the one more Red Bull game to come. It's not a lot of time between then and when you make the switch. How difficult is it to make the switch from the longest form to the shortest form?
I don't think it's too hard for the modern day sort of player. Most of the boys are involved in both formats and we've got a 9-day period before our first game. So we'll have five or six training sessions together, and yeah, it's not too hard when you have to swing hard. It's fun, actually.
Well, that was part of the commentary there, Sam, was you just swing away and you've only got one pace. Is that accurate? Is that actually how you go about particularly your 2020 cricket? You just think there's nothing to lose, let's just swing away?
Yeah, well, Ronnie was great last year. He gave me a pretty clear role in the power play for the team, and yeah, I just tried to execute that. As you touched on, I'm quite a small man, so I use other areas of the ground that blokes like Aaron Finch can just clear the boundary. I have to sort of ramp it over the keeper to get a boundary. But, it's a good fun role at the top there.
As we do prepare for the BBL, is it something that you look forward to because it is just simply so much fun? It is such a different format. I know it's been around for quite a while now, but it's just almost like a breath of fresh air that you just get to play and just release all the shackles?
Yeah, it's definitely a tournament the players look forward to. And even playing against your mates. Like the start, we have two stars in Renegade Derbies, which are great. Where you're playing against your mates, and then for us young guys coming through, we get to play against some international experience. I know for me this year, playing against AB de Villiers later on in the comp will be a real highlight.
The ramp has become one of your go-to shots, Sam. How much time do you spend practicing not just the ramp, but shots that are, you know, not from the traditional cricket textbook?
Yeah, I spent a fair bit of time sort of practicing more a few years ago, just for fun, really. I wasn't contracted anywhere. I was just mucking around with mates at school, and as you do with school kids, and then I sort of thought they could maybe be used in a game, especially in the power play where there's two out and you're trying to manipulate the field for the other captain. So I sort of brought it into the 2020 theme, and it's a fun shot. It's sometimes a risky shot, but you can either look like a hero or an idiot in 2 seconds.
I guess one of the stories of last year that made you so fascinating was the fact that you didn't actually have a contract leading into the start of last season, and then from there things worked your way. Marcus Harris found his way into the test team. Finchie was part of that test setup for a while as well. Did that kind of just go to exactly what we were talking about of just playing with freedom, given that you were starting with nothing really?
Yeah, definitely. I think it helped having Andrew McDonald as coach. I had a great relationship with him from the Vicks as well and from before that. So, he just encouraged me to go out there and have fun in those first few games while I was a replacement player. So that's all I did. And then, the rest sort of unfolded. And it turned out to be a great season.
Sam, the style of cricket over the last few years keeps changing, and what works, and, you know, bringing on slower bowlers at certain times, and the power plays. Do you suspect that there'll be any tactical changes going into this BBL season? Do you get a feel that there's something that may be different to previous years that will give you an advantage?
Yeah, I think spin will definitely be exploited a fair bit more, maybe in the power play. I think changes of pace and bowlers always changing. I think you'll see a lot of field changes pretty much every ball, and bowlers bowling maybe 3 to 4 variations an over, even as a pace bowler. I think going to the days where a bowler will just run in, try and bowl fast on the length, because with the wickets and the batsmen these days, that's probably not the recipe. So, yeah, I think there should be a lot of variety and the batters will still be trying to swing hard, so it should be entertaining.
Sam Harper joining us on SEN Melbourne Renegades Membership Day. You can get on red.com.au now. Flexi membership, which is normally $66, is today only $34. So just, I was sitting down last night mapping out your top order, Sam, in no particular order. Finch, Harris, Harper, Cooper, Marsh. It's not bad.
Yeah, it's not bad. And then you got Danny Christian to come, who was great for us late last year. Mohammed Nabi. We've got Jackie Wildermuth in there. Willie Sutherland can hit the ball about 200 metres. So, yeah, hopefully it should be a decent batting lineup.
And from your point of view, you've watched Sean Marsh take the Renegades apart year on year. At least that's something you don't have to worry about this year.
Definitely. He made 214 against us a few weeks ago. I've seen enough of him from behind the stump, so I'm looking forward to seeing him from the other end.
I'm also interested, while we've got you, before we let you go, what have you taken out of the Australian team over the last two tests?
Yeah, well, the other day was quite amazing. 3 for 600. I think they've played really good cricket for a long time now, and they just showed their class against Pakistan in the last two tests. I'm hoping New Zealand, with a really strong side, it should be a really interesting and hopefully a bit even three-test series there.
Sam, Michael Klinger comes in as your coach. I spoke to him last week on Afternoons and not long out of the game, so I guess he's going to understand the challenges that the modern player has making the switch from all the formats and the demand on time and all that sort of stuff as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think, he probably had nearly a 15 to 20-year career, played in England, the IPL, Bangladesh, played the Big Bash for the first eight seasons. So, yeah, I'll be definitely trying to pick his brain and, use his knowledge. And he'll be great just coming out of the game because he'll understand sort of where the players see the game going and, when we might just need a rest in the period and when we might need to ramp things up a little bit.
Sam, there's been some talk over the last couple of days regarding the Australian team about Tim Payne taking advice or being told, allegedly, what to do from Steve Smith. As your skipper is Aaron Finch, would you ever feel comfortable seeing the position that you do and seeing the field from your position to give a suggestion or at least have a discussion with the skipper for him to ultimately make a decision?
Oh, maybe this year. Now, I don't know. I think last year I was just happy to let Peachy do his work.
And he did a good job.
Young sort of, be the young kid on the block and chat away and try and get in the batter's mind maybe every now and again. But, if I saw something obvious, I'd go up and say it to him. But I think most of the senior boys have got that covered. I'm happy just to try and provide some energy.
Sam, thanks for joining us this morning. It's coming through thick and fast off the text machine as well that you're one of the young players in the competition that people get very, very excited about. So good luck and hopefully you can have another campaign like last year.
Thanks, guys. Enjoy the golf next week.
Put a shrimp on the Barbie, Cameron.
I was looking for the shrimp on the Barbie, though.
Oh, he may have done it.
Oh, my.
And now that call will forever stick.
That might even been a lobster.
4 feet for the first eagle of the day. You bet.
Oh, come on. When have you ever known anyone to put a shrimp on the Barbie here in Australia, Del?
Not once.
No.
Not once.
No.
It's almost offensive, isn't it?
I feel for our next guest, Cam Percy, because I get the feeling that it's not the first time. He's been living overseas for quite a while now. I get the feeling it's not the first time that he's had to tell Americans in particular, and English are just as bad, that we don't put a shrimp on the Barbie. Cameron Percy joins us ahead of the Australian Open tomorrow. Cam, thanks for your time. Welcome back to Australia.
Yeah, thanks, guys. It's fantastic. I've been here 3 days now. I'm in Sydney. It's been fantastic to be home. I spent the afternoon yesterday cruising around the harbour with a friend of mine, and we docked into Darling Harbour and had dinner. So it's been a good start to the trip.
Oh, what's the air conditions like up there? We've been well aware over the last couple of weeks about some of the really sad stories about the bushfires that is happening in that particular area. Is that swamped Sydney as well?
Yeah, it's terrible. You just walk outside and it's just smoke everywhere, and there's a real haze. It's almost like it's a little bit cloudy the whole time, if that makes any sense. But there's actually no clouds, so it's not real good up here at all.
And those that love their golf, there is one particular player, Bryson DeChambeau, that takes into the air density and wind conditions. Does this change anything in regards to the golf ball's flight if there's this overlaying level of smog?
I'm sure he would have a reason for it, or there'd be something there, but I haven't noticed anything yet. No, it hasn't made a difference at all, but that's something he would probably have looked at, I'm sure.
And what's your recent form been like, Cam? How you been travelling in recent months and coming into this Australian summer of golf?
Yeah, I've had a really good start to the season over there. I'm almost halfway to getting my card back already, and I only played 4 or 5 events, so started off really well. I missed the last cut by a shot, which is a bit annoying, but I'm really happy with my game, and I start in Hawaii, and I could be playing 6 weeks in a row when I start back up over in January. So I'm in a nice little bit of form.
That form that you've got right now, and you've been playing, well, you've played all around the world over your career, clearly, but then coming back to Australia, is there something specific about our courses and our conditions that is specific to be successful here compared to around the world?
Yeah, there's definitely a difference down here. It's firmer. But in America, everything's all lush and they water the crap out of it, basically, to make it look green so it looks good on TV. So it's quite... over in America, everything's wet. So around the green, it's wet and soft. And the main difference here is... and there's rough everywhere. Whereas here this week, there's barely any rough. And if you miss the green, it's all really tight and firm. So I've spent the last 2 days just working on my chipping and trying to work out how to chip off it because I haven't done it for a year, basically, since I was here last year.
Well, most people putt off those tight lies around the greens. You play percentages on those particular courses. So if you're just getting a little bit nervy, grab the putter.
Yep. Well, actually, I worked out just the three woods even better.
Oh, yeah.
So the three woods got a little bit more loft than your putter. So I've worked out, I think if I miss the green this week and there's no bunker in the way, I'm just going to use the three wood, I think.
Nice.
I like that. That's a good strategy. Hey, Cam, how's the wrist? You had a fall earlier in the year that ended up being a bit more serious than perhaps what you first thought.
Yeah, it's nowhere near 100. It's actually quite sore. I wake up every morning and I can't do a push-up or anything. My wrist just hurts too much to do a push-up. So, I did it in April this year and it's been a bit of a nightmare, to be honest with you. It just kept getting complication after complication. And I played, I think, 4 weeks in a row to start the season. Actually, it was seven of 8 weeks. And it's been really sore ever since. So I'm sort of half trying to look after it and trying to fix it again because it hadn't been sore for a little while, but now it's sore again. So just trying to work out what I can and can't do to stop it being sore, I guess.
Was there a point where you were starting to get a bit worried about how serious it was and whether it would impact you long term?
Yeah, I at one stage there, I did all the rehab and everything went great and I started playing and it hurt and then my fingers went numb. I literally had I had pins and needles, that sensation in my fingers for like 2.5 weeks and I couldn't get rid of it. And I'm like, this isn't... Oh, I was scared I was going to have a heart attack because I'm thinking, oh, my hand's gone numb, I'm going to have a heart attack. So I was scared to fly. Every day I'd wake up and I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to have a heart attack here. But my physio in Raleigh, he helped me out big time and we did a lot of dry needling and that for about a month. Just took a month off golf and got the numbness out of my fingers, and then there was only one finger that was numb, and then that's gone now. So for a while there, I thought, oh, this is it. I'm finished with golf, and I wasn't too sure what I was going to do, to be honest with you. Mm.
Well, as you said, you're in good form at the moment, getting ready for the Australian starting tomorrow. There's a particular group that tees off at 11:50 a.m., Scott Garcia and Casey. It must be good, once again, putting yourself up against some of the best players in the world. Have you already planned out roughly what sort of score you feel like you need to shoot day in, day out to match it with the best?
Not really, because it all depends on the wind and all that sort of stuff. Like, if we get no wind, because the greens are all little sections with slopes and that, so if there's no wind, we can use the slopes, and I'm assuming the scoring is going to be really low. But if it's windy, like it has been already, with a little gale on the last few days, it's going to be really hard. And there's 4 par 3s, and the shortest club I've hit is a 5-iron. So,
wow. Yeah.
I'm not sure what sort of score we're going to need unless it all depends on the wind, basically.
And then are you playing a pro-am today? Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm off at 1 o'clock today. So
when you're,
I've slept into about five this morning. That's
nice. That's a good start. So when you're playing a pro-am, and we've all played in them with the pros in the past, and we're out there trying to prove ourselves to say that we could be on the tour like you are.
Like you are.
What are you actually trying to get out of it? How much are you there to obviously have a bit of fun and a moment to relax with, you know, sponsors and other people that have joined in, but also learn the course? How much detail goes into today's round?
Well, today's a pro-am. I treat pro-ams like these people paid a lot of money to play with the pros. I treat them. I try and give the amateurs the best day they can. So I don't do any. I've done all my practice Monday, Tuesday. I've worked out where I want to go and all that sort of stuff. So I'll basically just today it'll just be a hit and giggle for me, and then I'll play probably the last three holes properly, like I'm actually trying sort of thing. But for me, it's all about having a good day with the playing partners and all that sort of stuff. So that's how I treat pro-ams.
Cam, it's great to have you back in the country, and good luck for what's to come in the next couple of weeks.
All right, thanks, guys.